on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
Five Live.
James King's on the line. How are you, James?
How are you?
Yeah, very good. We might be racing at Epsom this afternoon, but it's still movies day on the Mayo programme with Phil Williams this afternoon, so we've got time to rattle through some films. Before we do, James,
yeah.
A point of order.
Here we go.
Cast your mind back a week or so to the Cannes Film Festival. People listening last week will have heard Mark Kermode's thoughts on the whole thing, including this rant.
Can I start with a complaint?
Yes.
Okay, so the other day, I'm in the screening room, right, and James King's sitting next to me. And James, I say, how's it going, James? He says, oh, I think I finally understand what you mean about the weariness of Cannes. I really feel it's been very hard this year. And I said, oh, this is, you know, I've started to sympathise with the child, you know, because, hey, he's finally grown up into a man and realised that Cannes is a real ordeal, yeah? So then I find out this morning that we can't do this transmission now from Radio France, but we have to do it from the flat that James has been staying in. And James has led me to believe that he's been staying in some kind of student hovel and things are very, very difficult for him, exactly like I did when I worked for the radio for all those years doing the Cannes coverage. I get to James's flat. It's absolutely wonderful. He's got this bijou fourth-floor apartment overlooking the Rue d'Antibes. It's far more central than the place I'm staying in. It's lovely and cool. It's really, really nice. I don't know what that boy is complaining about, and he's gone home already.
Let's do the box office top 10.
Before you do the box office top 10, last thing on my complaint, right? As vodcast viewers will see, I'm literally sitting on a balcony surrounded by jasmine. I mean, the man has flowers. I've been staying in the Novotel. This is a total class distinction, and I demand that James King is fired immediately.
Okay, so he wants your head on a plate. Your response is?
I'm sure people at home, their hearts are bleeding for the fact that Mark had to stay in a Novotel. How terrible for him, and doing his culture show reviews from the south of France. I mean, that's hard work. I'm sure people at home would feel so sorry for him right now. I did have a quite pleasant apartment. It did have jasmine on the balcony, but what can I say? I'm like J-Lo, you know, she wants white candles and everything draped in white. I demanded jasmine on my balcony.
And all the yellow fruit pastels fished out of the packet.
Exactly. It was a pleasant time, it was a pleasant flat, and I don't feel sorry for Mark at all because he's famous and on the telly.
Apparently his hotel was so bad that he was so incensed by it. It was like a scene from The Exorcist, which is quite apt.
It wasn't bad at all. He gets the red carpet treatment when he goes to Cannes.
Right, let's, first of all, before we do the box office top 10,
yeah,
ask you about Pirates of the Caribbean
at okay.
World's End. There was a 15-minute rant from the good doctor last week. He said that the best thing about it was worse than he expected.
Right, yeah, well, he's going to love that, isn't he? I mean, if he'd gone in and it had been brilliant and he loved it, the hell would have frozen over, the world would have stopped spinning, he wouldn't know what to have done. Yeah, basically, I didn't like it very much either. That's not just to agree with Mark, and I'm a fan of the first one. And even though in the second one nothing much really happened, I enjoyed it enough because Johnny Depp was doing his drunk Edward Scissorhands stuff, which I thought was very funny. But this time round, not even Johnny Depp, who, let's face it, is the pull of those films, not even he seems that bothered. And when it stretched out over 168 minutes, and really there's quite a lot of not...
How many?
168 minutes. There's quite a lot of not Johnny Depp in the film. You've got quite a struggle on your hands. The opening, I thought, was quite good. Not necessarily the initial scene, but actually when they go to the Far East and they meet up with Chow Yun-fat, you know, I thought there's some quite nice stuff there, some quite nicely done. And Gore Verbinski can't tell a story to save his life, the director, but he can light things nicely. So it looks very moody. But after that, Ian got the first idea what was going on. No one in the cast had. You could tell that they were just making up things as they went along, right, making up new rules.
Is there a good cameo from Keith Richards?
It's an okay cameo. The problem, I suppose, is that we were all expecting it and we all knew that it was going to happen and we all knew... Well, actually, it was quite useful that I knew in advance that he was playing Johnny Depp's dad, because they don't make it particularly clear in the film, as they don't make anything particularly clear. With the second one, it got by, I think, because even though it was nonsense, it was still a sense of fun to it. But I think that sense of fun has gone from this one and it now just feels indulgent. And the people in it, I mean, Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom, beautiful to look at, but really, they're just so drippy in this.
Right, apparently we've got some listener reviewers.
Oh, okay.
That we can have a listen to.
I don't know which is worse, sitting through Mark Kermode's vitriolic rant against Pirates 3, it's almost as long as the movie, or even watching Pirates 3 itself again.
It's like being stuck in a wardrobe with an American wrestler shouting at you for 3 hours.
Spaghetti Western opening, and the star who thinks all he needs to do is turn up, slur, and walk around like Pinocchio with piles.
A long voyage of excruciating proportions that will leave you befuddled and confused.
My name is In-hyuk, and I'm from South Korea. Oh God, it's so serious. What's with those twists?
The most exciting bit about Pirates was that we had an intermission, and I thought the projector had done the decent thing and killed itself.
This movie sinks.
So it went down well then. I mean, he's made a huge amount of money, so I don't think Jerry Bruckheimer and the people at Disney are particularly worried. It's a shock because the first one, bar Mark Kermode, was pretty much universally praised by the critics. 5-star review in Empire magazine, that
and
kind
that
of stuff.
And that garnered Johnny Depp's Oscar nomination, didn't it?
Absolutely, and you know, I think he deserved that for it because I think it's a culturally important role for him. Maybe it's silly, it's him messing about, but it's a character that really caught into the public's imagination. But by now, people are getting tired with it because they've just got lazy. They just don't remember what made it great in the first place. That vodcast you mentioned, I should just remind people that should you want to see Mark in his full glory on my balcony at the Cannes Film Festival with Jasmine behind him, you can download the vodcast. It's kind of like, I normally sit next to Mark at film screenings and say about 10 or 15 minutes before the lights go down for the film to start, I get this in my ear, I get this in my face every time, the latest rant, the latest thing that's annoying Victor Meldrew, you know. So if you want to experience that, what I experience every time I sit next to Mark at a screening, get the vodcast because it's just like he sat next to you.
bbc.co.uk/5live is the place to go to that. Click on Simon's page and you'll be able to download that vodcast, and the chap's still doing it as a podcast as well, so if you just want the audio version without pictures, but you do need to see the pictures where you see the flailing arms and the tense forehead and the furrowed brows. bbc.co.uk/5live to download the vodcast of Dr. Kermode. It's a bit like when you stood at a queue waiting for a bus, James, and a fella accosts you and you can't go anywhere because you're at a bus queue, and it's a bit like that, isn't it?
It's very similar, but with more Brill Cream.
Right, just ahead of the box office top 10, classic winning... I've arranged a fanfare for you. We should hear that. Ladies and gentlemen, James King.
Thank you very much.
So, this week's new release is Flyboys Paradise Lost, The Hitcher, and Wedding Days. We spoke to Jason Biggs on the programme earlier this week, but let's do the box office top 10 first of all before we get to our next race. And at 10, Mr. Bean's Holiday.
Which is rubbish. I think, along with, off the top of my head, Wild Hogs and Norbit, and potentially even Pirates of the Caribbean 3, it's one of the worst films of the year that's made the most amount of money that could potentially make 2007 a bit of a bad year for films.
Someone's wrong. Is it the critics or is it the people who are going?
No, well, it's normally the critics, isn't it? I think that the thing that critics forget is that Mr. Bean now isn't what he was when he first started on the telly. When he first started on the telly, he was a big sort of evening, 8:30 at night mainstream show. Now he's become very much a kids' movie. And of course, this was released during the Easter holidays. There's been the kids' cartoons since the TV show. So he's really downshifted in terms of age, in terms of audience age. And of course, you know, Easter holidays, you want to get your kids to be quiet for a couple of hours, so you go to take them to see the funny Mr. Bean Man.
At 9, Love Wrecked.
You know, if you can't get Lindsay Lohan for a movie, you get Hilary Duff. If you can't get Hilary Duff for a movie, you get someone called Amanda Bynes, and she's the star of Love Wrecked. Her movies don't do hugely well, and she's certainly not in the papers very often, but I reckon ultimately she probably is the actress who'll grow up to be the most sensible and the best loved out of all of those. Her next film is called Hairspray, which is based on the musical with John Travolta, which she is very good in. Love Wrecked is average, but watch out for her.
At 8, Ginderbine.
Which is, you know, a grown-up story, a grown-up thriller, Laura Linney and Gabriel Byrne from a Raymond Carver story. It's, if you saw an Australian film from a few years ago called Lantana, which was great, it's the same guy doing this, and it's just something different, it's something serious, and at this time of year, you don't get much stuff like that.
At 7, Chini Kum.
Which I haven't seen, which stars Amitabh Bachchan, who is the biggest Bollywood star ever. It's doing very well to break into the top 10. He's not just a movie star, he's a legend. But I haven't seen it, so I can't tell you.
At 6, Magicians.
Should have been funnier. Mitchell and Webb, funny guys. You know, their TV show is funny. Peep Show is very funny. But Magicians, I think even they realise it's just not as funny as it should be. It's quite sweet. It's quite low-key. There are a few chuckles in it. But compared to what they've done on telly, that Mitchell and Webb look, you know, this just isn't as good.
At five, a film that both our editor and my friend Joanne says is great for kids, Bridge to Terabithia.
It's great for adults as well. I loved it. I thought this was brilliant. And, of course, when this came out in America earlier on in the year, it really sort of hung around for ages in the top ten and was a real crossover hit, because although it's not a huge star movie, it's not a hugely hyped movie. I think when people got to see it, they thought, this is a really warm-hearted film, an E.T. kind of warm-hearted family fantasy. I would recommend it, not just to children, obviously the primary audience, but to adults as well.
At four, 28 weeks later.
Love it. Love it. Messy, grimy, scary. It may be a sequel, but this proves that sequels don't have to be rubbish. I just think it's a really great film.
At three, a film I saw last week, which I thought for me was half an hour too long, but nevertheless well made.
Yeah.
By David Fincher, called Zodiac.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. It's so slow, isn't it? It takes ages, and I don't think it really knows who to focus on. There are several characters in Zodiac. Jake Gyllenhaal, you've got Robert Downey Jr. Doesn't quite know where to go. Jake Gyllenhaal disappears for the middle section, but if it had been trimmed a little bit shorter, it would have been a much punchy thriller. But it's still very classy stuff.
At two, a film that doesn't know if it wants to be an action film, a comedy film, a hip-hop film, Spider-Man 3.
Where's the hip-hop in Spider-Man 3?
Wow, there's a bit where he dances down the street.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I thought was the best bit. Completely out of sync with the rest of the film. It's sort of the Spider-Man laughter hour, you know. It's like, well, hang on, I thought Spider-Man was a fairly serious comic book adventure. And then it goes really slapstick. It is a bit all over the place. Like some of the other part threes we've had this year and are coming up this year, it seems to be the weakest of the trilogy. But it's still good fun.
Saw Ocean's 13 this week, quite liked it.
Better than the last one?
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought Ocean's 12 was
poor.
Yeah. Ocean's 11 was good. And Ocean 13 is good fun.
Excellent.
At one, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, which we've dealt with.
Yeah.
And we've done the box office top 10. And now we're going to talk about some of the releases this week. And we spoke to Jason Biggs on the programme on Tuesday afternoon about Wedding Days. It's out today. And James has seen it.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, isn't he, Jason Biggs?
Yeah, lovely. Good fun.
I believe he's playing golf at St Andrews over the next few days. So if you happen to be lucky enough to be up there, look out for the guy who made out with an apple pie in American Pie. That's him, Jason Biggs. It's a bit sad, really, when that's the highlight of your career so far. And I'm afraid that Wedding Days probably isn't going to change that. Basically, it starts off as a black comedy. He's a guy who is about to propose to his girlfriend. He goes down on one knee. He's got the wedding ring out. And she dies. Now, this is done in the comedy way. And he goes into depression for several months until he thinks, right, I've had enough of this. I'm going to get out there, I'm going to get back to form, and I'm going to date someone again. In fact, I'm going to go further than that. I'm going to ask the first girl I meet to marry me. I'm going to risk something and be dangerous again. The first girl he does meet happens to be Isla Fisher, who's a waitress, who very handily isn't happy in her own relationship. And much to the surprise of Jason Biggs, she says yes. So he's about to marry someone who he doesn't know, and she's about to marry someone who she doesn't know. Now, actually, I think at this point the film could have ended, and they could have just said, let's not do it, we're only joking. But they decide to go through with it, and it's all about them actually, you know, trying to get to know one another and trying to woo one another when they're already married. So I'll tell you what I think about it. Also, you can say what you think about it, because okay. You're at the same screening as me, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
But first up, here's a clip from Wedding Days.
You said yes?
Yeah, well, why not? You know, I think this is exactly what I need to get my life back on track. I mean, why can't two strangers get married?
I don't know, because it's retarded.
Look, you said it yourself. You said I need to get back out there and meet people, right?
So, yeah, okay. Meet, not marry. Why can't you just date her for a while like a normal human being?
Look, don't worry, okay? It's not, you know, it's not like we're getting married today. We talked about it and we decided to take things slow.
So what's next?
She's moving in with me. I gotta go.
Jason Biggs there in Wedding Days. That's a funny bit. That's one of the best bits of the film. I think the problem I had with it is that, as I said, it starts off as this black comedy. There are some quite dark moments, some quite almost sick moments, really, but funnily done. And I thought, oh, hang on, this is a romantic comedy, but it's got a bit of an edge to it. It's got a bit of a bite to it. I quite like this. It's different. But gradually, that goes away. And what started off as that edge becomes almost a bit desperately trying to make you laugh. There's some wacky parents in this. There's some wacky friends in this. And the whole thing does seem a bit forced. Ha ha, we're so eccentric and we're so crazy, we are going to make you laugh. And that is the last thing that actually does make you laugh, when people seem so desperate to be funny.
When it descends into wacky.
Yeah, and that's the problem I had with it. So it started off quite nicely, and actually Jason Biggs and Isla Fisher I think make a good couple. I think Isla Fisher is actually on her way up. I mean, you know, she was in Wedding Crashers a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
kind of doing the same routine in this, a little bit crazy, a little bit kooky, but very good at it. I think Jason Biggs, bless him, I think is a charming leading man, but I think this is unfortunately maybe his last gasp. You know, he does need to actually get a hit movie again and do something different. So I was disappointed, because it did start off well and did have potential, and the guy who wrote and directed it is a stand-up comedian, and clearly, you know, he knows what he's doing, but he seemed to lose grip on exactly where he was going with this film.
There are some funny set pieces in this, as you say, and I thought, had I not been to see it at a journalist screening, this would be a perfect Sunday night DVD, but it's probably not worth a tenner at the cinema.
It's definitely a DVD. In fact, I'm surprised it even came out of the cinema, I suppose because they are, you know, reasonably well-known actors, but there's been movies with bigger actors than these two that have gone straight to DVD. It certainly doesn't feel essential, and it certainly doesn't feel like an essential cinema night out. So it's disappointing because I like the people in it, but it just doesn't do it.
Okay, let's see if you can race through Flyboys, which is also out this week.
Yeah, Flyboys is set in the First World War, and it's about Americans who went over from the States to France to fight against the Germans, to fly in French aeroplanes against Germany. Now, this is before America actually officially joined the war, so they were doing it off their own back. And it stars James Franco. He's best known as playing Peter Parker's best mate, Harry, in the Spider-Man films. And it's very stiff upper lip. It's very old-fashioned. In fact, the poster, there's a big quote on it saying they don't make them like this anymore. It doesn't really make much sense when they've actually made a film like this, but there you go. But it's that old-fashioned feel to it. Let's have a clip from Flyboys.
Hey, fellas. What do you think I had to wear tomorrow, yellow or purple?
Anything but the pink. You get shot down at that, you're going to embarrass the entire escadrille.
What are you talking about getting shot down for?
What's the matter? Are you nervous?
No, no. You? You brought it up.
We're all nervous. Except Porter. He's got religion on his side.
I'm not nervous.
Hey, it's all right to be a little edgy before a fight. Keeps you sharp. Isn't that right, Skinner?
The fight's happening in. They don't shoot at you.
The film is called Flyboys. It is cheese, 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 cheese. You can make a list of everything you know that's going to happen, tick it off as it happens in that order. It is very predictable. It's glossily made, and there's some great aerial sequences, some great aeroplane fights in it, which is actually the best stuff in it. But this is well over 2 hours. It's way too long, and you're just waiting for the next action scene. I'll tell you what it reminded me of, and this is done much better. There's an episode of Blackadder Goes Forth with Rick Mail when they deal with the Air Force, and they deal with a lot of the same things, actually in an amusing way in Blackadder, about how, you know, you're only going to last about 4 minutes up in the air. But in this, they obviously take it much more seriously. But Blackadder did it much better. They did the same story, and it was much more entertaining. With this, it definitely tries to be that old-fashioned war film feel, but unfortunately now that just feels very corny. It doesn't actually feel as uplifting as it should do.
Okay, so a big no to Flyboys.
Not very good so far. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Kermode always chooses the bad weeks to take off. We know that.
Off. Yeah. As it's Friday afternoon, we have James King doing Dr. Kermode's impression, only with slightly less... what's the word, James?
Vitriol.
Vitriol and madness, I was going to go for.
Well, thank you. I do agree with him on Pirates 3, though. I feel... I just think I'm turning into him, and this slightly concerns me. It's like when you realise that actually you're your dad, you know. You're turning
know
into
you
your father.
And it's like when you start watching music television and you go, is that a man or a woman singing?
Yeah.
It's the same thing,
I like the first two Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and that's what differentiated me from Mark. But now we agree on the third one, and that concerns me slightly. But there you go, what
the
can
next I time
do?
I see you at a screening and you've got Brill Cream in your hair, I'll have a word.
Yeah, thank you, do that.
The Hitcher. I've seen this before with Rutger Hauer.
That's the original one, the old 80s one. Did you watch it on video by any chance?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it was a real video classic,
yeah,
wasn't it? A real video renter. It's remade, not much different to it, to be honest. It's the same plot, although there is the inclusion of a female in this, because the first one, if I remember correctly, was Rutger Hauer and C. Thomas Howell, but in this one, it's actually a couple that this evil, psychotic hitchhiker takes hostage. The hitchhiker in question this time round is Sean Bean, and I actually think he's the best thing in it, because he's completely psychotic in this, completely evil, and he does it really, really well. It doesn't attempt to really move on from the first one. It does play very much as a low-rent thriller. Classy in moments, horrific in moments, but really no huge aspirations to be anything different. In fact, again, you know, going back to Wedding Days, I'm surprised that this one actually came out of the cinema, because it doesn't really feel like a cinema movie. I'm just guessing that because it's the week after Pirates of the Caribbean, a lot of mid-range stuff is coming out. But the plot, if there is such a thing, is about an evil hitchhiker who attacks a couple, you know, down in, I think it's in New Mexico somewhere. and just chases them, and there's some horrific bits in it, there's some gruesome bits in it. In fact, the ending, or certainly the sort of the punchline in terms of the horrific moments towards the end, is really, really gruesome. So it does actually do, it achieves what it sets out to do. Is it a great movie? Is it an essential movie? I hate to say the same thing again, Phil, but it doesn't really feel like it. And actually, this feels very much like the first one, in that go and rent it on DVD, go and see it at home. That's where it really has its natural home. But Sean Bean shines in this. He's great in it. I like it when he's evil.
Well, listen, we've run out of time as far as the movies are concerned. I'm sorry there's nothing worth seeing this week.
Well, that's not... Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. It's not really my fault. We can blame Pirates of the Caribbean eating up all the screens everywhere around the country.
OK. Well, look, you take care and I'll talk to you soon, James.
You too. See ya.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.